Hey Siri, it's Stack Trace time.
Running your shortcut. Shortcut says, I've turned on Do Not Disturb. Have fun recording. And hey, say hi to Rambo for me.
Do you like my new shortcut?
I love it. It's my favorite one.
I should put it on Sharecuts, right?
Sure. I'm sure everyone is looking for a Stack Trace shortcut because everyone records Stack Trace.
So how are you, Rambo?
I'm very good. How are you? I know you've been traveling a lot more than me.
Yeah, I just came back from my kind of three-part journey to Sweden, to Spain, and to France, because I attended three different conferences in Spain, of course, with you, where we recorded our last episode, the live show. I was in the Swift and Fika conference in Stockholm, which was amazing. And I just came back home from French Kit, which was in Paris, in France.
Such a good name.
Yeah, it's a really, really good name. And great conference, too. All of those three conferences were really, really good. So, yeah, I was very, very lucky to be able to go to all of them. And I had so much fun. But when I came home, I was very, very tired. And I slept for like, I don't know, 14, 15 hours straight. But now I'm back on track.
You see, I think we should start with our first segment, which is what are we up to? It's always how we start the podcast.
Absolutely.
And we can't do it this week without talking about our traveling. And it was my first long-haul flight because I had never left the country.
Yeah, I just realized that when I met you, like that you had never been abroad before, which, you know, in Europe, that's not very common because... Yeah, it's like common that people travel and we have such short distances between the countries. I can literally go abroad like in 1.5 hours with a car. So yeah, that was very fascinating to me that that was your first time abroad.
Yeah, you can say the same about South America. Like I've always lived in the east coast of Brazil. So it's a little bit further away from the neighbor countries. But it's like, I don't know, 2 hours flight, maybe three. So it's not that far, but yeah, it was my first time. And I'm very happy to report that I didn't suffer from jet lag at all.
Yeah, that was also very fascinating. That was very impressive that you were up the same time as me the day after you arrived, even though you had flown all across the Atlantic and I had just, come from Sweden. So that was very cool.
Yeah, I think it helped that the flight was at night. So as soon as I boarded, I changed all of my devices to the Spanish time zone. And it's 5 hours ahead of Brazil. I think being ahead is a little bit easier as well. And I couldn't sleep in the flight. I have trouble sleeping in airplanes, every vehicle, in fact. And I arrived there, I was tired, a little bit sleepy, but I decided to hold on and wait until like midnight. So we went to sleep at like midnight and woke up at 8:30 and I was fine. So yeah, I love that. And you mentioned that maybe my irregular sleep schedule helped me in that regard, because I'm not one of those people who goes to sleep the same time every day and wakes up the same time every day. So I'm used to having some flexibility in my sleep schedule.
Yeah, totally. I definitely think so. It's, jet lag is all about just fighting that urge to go to sleep, right? Because you are still on your own time, especially when you go east, at least for me, when like you did when you came to Spain. And you just need to stay awake. If you manage to stay awake, then that's usually fine because you can just sleep in a little bit the morning after and you usually are, you're back on track. But if you do fall to the temptation of going to sleep, then it's really, really bad. I've had some really, really bad jet lag in the past, but have learned my lesson to just stay awake, drink an extra cup of coffee or two.
Yeah, and it wasn't hard to stay awake because I arrived at the speaker's house. For people who don't know, in Spain, they do this thing called the speaker's house. So they basically rent a house for the speakers. And you can go to a hotel if you prefer, but I chose the speaker's house. And Paul was there, and he met me at the speaker's house, and we were chatting, and there was the Apple event, and there was barbecue and wine. So it wasn't that hard to stay awake.
No, exactly. There were things to do. For sure.
Yeah, definitely. So before you tell me more about what you've been up to, I need to tell you something.
Yeah, sure.
I have made a purchase.
Ooh, what can it be? Did you buy an iPhone X, S, X Max, XS?
Plus? Awesome extra? No. I bought a MacBook Escape.
Really? You bought a non-pro laptop?
Precisely. And it's all your fault.
I didn't even do anything to sell that to you. I don't think I even, like, I didn't even say anything about this computer. You were just like, oh, is that your computer? And I was like, yeah, it's really great. And that was it. And that convinced you? Wow, such a great computer. It sold itself.
It's been bothering me that I don't have, that I only have one Mac for a while. First of all, because I can't really run the beta version of macOS. I use an external SSD, but it's not the same as actually running the OS. It's also worrying me that what if something happens to my Mac? What do I do then? I have to rent one or go buy one quickly so I don't... Because if the keyboard fails, which it's known for doing that, even
could
though
happen.
I've been fine. Yeah. So I decided to, I had to get a second one. And I noticed yours during the trip, and it's so cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure is, yeah.
Yeah, and it's small and portable. And you mentioned you don't have any issues with performance. So even though they are probably going to update it very soon, the exchange rate between my currency and the dollar has been increasing, and it's getting more expensive as time goes on. So I decided it was time to finally get myself a second Mac. So I got the MacBook Escape as a backup device and as a let's run all the betas device.
Awesome. That's really cool. Well, congratulations on buying the best computer you've ever had.
Ooh, awesome.
And for those of you who don't know what we're referring to when we say MacBook Escape, it's the computer I have, which we've talked about in the past, which is the 13-inch MacBook Pro without the touch bar. So it has two Thunderbolt ports, which is pretty much the only characteristic of this computer that I don't really like, the fact that it only has two ports. But I think it's fine for most usages. But it's just a fantastic computer overall. Otherwise, the number one thing I love about it is just the battery life. And I think you're going to love these things. I know we've talked about it before, and you said that, you know, you favor performance, but one thing I think you're going to love about this computer is just how portable and how much battery life it has, especially now that you're starting to do a little bit more traveling, which, you know, I'm doing a lot of traveling. So for me, like, this is the perfect machine for me.
Yeah, definitely. I'm doing at least two more trips this year, so it's good to have a more portable machine. I'm going to have to set an easier password for my account, though, because the one I use is quite hard to type, and I rely on Touch ID a lot.
But you have the Apple Watch. Just unlock with Apple Watch.
Ooh, yeah, but you can do that for sudo.
Maybe not. You, no, I don't know about that. No.
If you want to sudo in terminal, you can use the Apple Watch, unfortunately. And I have mine set up to use Touch ID for sudo. So, yeah, I'll have to figure something out there without making my Mac too insecure.
That's a struggle. That's a real struggle. Cool. Well, that sounds awesome. I'm looking forward to hearing your first impressions about this computer when you get it. As you know, I really love it, and I'm looking forward to hear what you think about it.
Well, as is a tradition of Stack Trace, I'm definitely going to do a mini review of a product that's been released, I don't know, a year ago or something.
Yep, that's how we do things here. Breaking news, really, reviewing the Apple TV 2 years later and CarPlay 2 years later, and now we'll do a review of the 13-inch MacBook Pro. That's perfect.
Yeah.
All right, so... I've also just come back from my trips, like we talked about, and the major thing I've been working on since I came back is an update to my website, Swift by Sundell. So I'm working on like a big overhaul of the site, like a complete pretty much re-implementation of it. Currently I use Squarespace, which I really like Squarespace a lot. They really make it easy to set up a website and run a website. But as my site has kind of grown and as I want to do more kind of powerful things with it, I've started to more think that I need to have like my own site with my own implementation. That's what I've been working on kind of on the side for a while, but I also wanted to make an update to the existing version before I released the brand new one. So I updated the font, so now it uses the Source Sans Pro font, which is currently my favorite font in the whole world. It uses some new colors, some new spacing and things like that. And most importantly, I added a little shortcuts bar on the main page so you can easily navigate to new sections of the site, because one major issue with the current design has been discoverability. People sometimes send me emails and Twitter DMs and they ask, you know, how can I find your podcast? Or how can I find the categories view? Even though it's there, but it's just hard to find. So now I just made that easier. So yeah, a little update to my website is always fun. I am always kind of shocked the fact that I'm doing all my development on the site just by pasting custom CSS and JavaScript into a text box in Squarespace and actually pushing it live to this website, which is visited by a lot of people. So it's kind of scary every time I do that. But so far so good.
Yeah, when you told me that yesterday, I told you about the mishap with shortcuts.
Yeah, exactly. That you forgot to reboot the machine or something like that.
Yeah, I updated Xcode, and it's a Mac Mini in the cloud, so hosted by Mac Stadium, not a sponsor yet.
Squarespace not a sponsor either, by the way. We're just talking about the things we use here.
Exactly. So I updated Xcode to Xcode 10, and I forgot I had to do a rebuild of the app before I could actually run it again, and something happened, and it crashed, and it was ugly. And I don't have a monitoring system for it yet. There are some monitoring services out there, but they are all so expensive. Like, it doesn't seem feasible to me to pay for one of those yet. So I'll have to see what I do.
Maybe when I launch my new site on my new kind of custom implementation, maybe I can set up my server to ping your server and your server can ping my server. And then we can let each other know if one of our sites go down.
We'll be server buddies.
Yeah, server buddies. Best buddies. All right, let's get on with the main show. We should start with some follow-up. We've had quite a lot of people tell us about the fact that we, in a previous episode, said that Apple, they usually render the product photography and product in their advertisement. And it turns out that that's really not true. And there's some really impressive videos out there showing both how they take photos of products and also how they made the new Series 4 watch faces, the videos of like the flames and the water and things like that. Those are not renders either. They're actually real videos. And we'll put a link in the show notes to two articles showing some of this stuff in action, which I thought was really fascinating and mind-blowing in a way. I was so sure that so many of these things were renders, but it turns out they are going this extra length to actually, you know, do this in real life, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I was fascinated by this, and I should have known better because, and this is how I segue from follow-up about pictures to air power, which I love to do.
You love to talk about air power. You just won't give up, will you?
Yeah, but we talked about the air power animation, and the first phase of the animation is a video, and now I'm thinking that it probably is actually a real video of the device. It only transitions to a 3D render after it actually shrinks and flies into the charging status view, so because that, of course, you can't predict with a video where the device will land in the UI.
Maybe they made like 2,000 different versions of it.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's very fascinating. And the person who works with this, does these pictures, they are an amazing photographer. Like, the setup they have to do to take those pictures is crazy.
Yeah, because not only do they have to eliminate like reflections from the screen, because you don't want to see the camera. You know, when I sometimes take a picture or something on my screen, you can see the reflection. You can see my phone in the screen. You wouldn't want to see that, and you would want it to look like just completely natural, which it does, and that must be extremely challenging. But also shadows, you know, like most of these are shot with just a plain white background, and there are no shadows. So yeah, lots of impressive like lighting setup going on there.
Yeah, I assume they did the same as the car industry, because the car industry is known for never using real cars. Even when you see a car driving in a commercial, it's usually a 3D render, because cars are notoriously hard to photograph in a good way.
Yeah.
So I guess if they could do a setup like this for a car, they would do it. But a car is a little bit bigger than an iPhone. So yeah, makes a little bit harder.
Just a little bit. Yeah, I wonder what Apple is going to do when they release their car, right? They're going to also just shoot it in a... They're going to create like this big hall that is just completely void of shadows and shoot it there.
It wouldn't surprise me. I think they definitely have the resources for it, and maybe they will do it.
They can just go to Johnny Ive's living room, right?
Of course.
Awesome. Yeah, so really cool stuff there. I was very impressed by that. And again, we'll put links in the show notes to those two articles. Very interesting stuff. Really recommend to watch it if you haven't seen those things. What we want to talk about on this episode is mostly news about iOS 12. So first of all, we want to go through some of the new features in iOS 12, you know, give our impressions of them now that it's out for everybody. And also, I know that you, Rambo, you've found some initial spelunking findings in the iOS 12.1 beta, but we'll get to that after our iOS 12 review. So you've been running iOS 12 for quite a while, since beta 1, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And I just put it on my phone when it came out, like 1 week ago.
Like normal people.
Like normal people. Let's start with you. Like, what are your overall impressions? You've lived with this OS now for a couple of months. Is it making a huge difference for you, the new features? Or is it kind of just a small update, in your opinion? What do you think?
It's actually very interesting and it's of course not the first time this happens, but I've been running this since June. And it's very interesting to see the reactions of the people who haven't been running it since June, and how they some things shock them, and you don't even realize you've been living with that for a long time already. Like the decisions that have been made in the Messages app, mainly separating the camera when you want to take a picture from the photos selection one.
Yep.
That's been bothering so many people, but I'm already used to it because I've been using this for half a year almost. So it's very interesting to see the reactions, and it's actually kind of difficult for me to describe what really changed for me, because it's been a gradual thing over many months instead of an immediate reaction thing.
Yeah.
But what I can say is that I really love shortcuts, and I really love the new Do Not Disturb features and the new notification features. Those are like my three favorite features of iOS 12. I'm not using Screen Time because I don't feel like I need to.
It was you don't want to know.
I actually tried it, and it didn't surprise me. The results were like in line with how I thought I used my device. So I think I'm very well in that regard. And I don't know. It's just one other process consuming battery life and computing all of the time I use the app. So I just left it off just in case. But there are some things that you can only really try when the final version comes out, because then you have the third parties integrating. I had been testing Carrot and pCalc and some other apps in beta versions, so those already had some iOS 12 exclusives. But Carrot, you can now ask, I can ask HomePod for the weather using Carrot, which is very funny, because to hear Siri saying some dirty things is very funny, and I love it. Don't do that if you have kids in your house, or you have to at least tone down the level of aggressiveness of Carrot. So yeah, it's very interesting. And my favorite thing in terms of third parties is third party password autofill, which I'm using with 1Password.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's amazing. Yeah, also one of my favorite features and already very, very useful. It's one of those things that you just wish was there all along, but now it's finally here, which is just great. The same thing about notifications. I feel a lot more productive now. Just dealing with notifications in general. I am not a huge fan of notifications and I leave them off for the most part. But sometimes, you know, I will enable them for like a airline company, for example, when I want to get updates about gate changes and things like that. But then airlines are notorious for sending lots of marketing through push notifications, which you're not supposed to do, but they do it anyway. And now I can easily just swipe, press manage, and just turn off notifications right there. Because otherwise it's so often that you get these notifications and they kind of disturb you, but you look at them and you go like, oh, I'll deal with it later. And then you forget about it. And now you can just take action directly in that context, which I think is it's makes a huge difference. And it's really, really nice.
Yeah, I also love the do not disturb in bad time mode, because not only will it silence notifications, but it actually turns down the brightness of the lock screen a lot, and it doesn't show notifications. So if you're, I'm one of those people, I know that some people have like a religious opinion that you shouldn't sleep next to your device, but I sleep with my iPhone right beside me in a Mophie charger.
Lying on another pillow next to you in bed, you know, with its own little blanket.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night. I don't use my Apple Watch while asleep. I just pick up the phone and check the time. And I don't see anything. I only see the time and nothing else. Because before iOS 12, you'd see like, oh, John sent you a message or some lots of notifications. And those can distract you from sleeping, which is kind of important, as we'll talk about later. So I love that as well.
And new for us as developers also, speaking about notifications, is that we can now get more finely grained control over how notifications are displayed in terms of grouping. So we can now add the same messages to a thread, for example, if you are building a chat app, like instant messaging app, and you want to display the same messages from the same person in a thread, you can do that and things like that. So I think just having more power, both as a user and as a developer, in terms of controlling notifications is just a really, really good thing. Because as a developer, you don't want people disabling your notifications, and implementing them in kind of a more smarter way now will probably, you know, get you further there.
Yeah, and we talked about, I think, the shortcuts discoverability issue. And from what I'm seeing so far, it looks like most people are using them to some extent, not necessarily the Shortcuts app, because Shortcuts is many things. It's not just an app. It's also a feature, and it's also a thing with Siri. So, I'm seeing quite a lot of adoption, and even some subreddits about Shortcuts. And Sharecuts, my website has been getting, I showed you the graph of yeah. Access right after iOS 12 released, and it jumped up a lot. So lots of people are looking for Shortcuts, and I've been getting lots of messages asking, when is the new website going to go up? And people are excited for it because I'm working on a new version of Shortcuts with lots of new features. And I'm hoping I can open it up to more submissions soon. So nice. I'm seeing lots of demand for Shortcuts.
Yeah, absolutely. The cool thing about Shortcuts is that it follows kind of the same principle as Swift, the programming language, that says that, you know, they want to use progressive disclosure, which is that you should be able to use Swift in a very, very lightweight, easy way and learn the language that way. But under the hood, it's extremely powerful. And as you learn, you discover more and more features of the language. And I feel like the same can be said about Shortcuts as well, where, like you say, you can use them just by assigning Siri commands to a given action or a given user activity in an app, which you as a user might not think that you're, you know, doing automation or things like that. You're really just like assigning one command to one action. But then once you discover those things and you dive in and you maybe install the Shortcuts app, you can string these actions together. And I was playing around with it a little bit today in the Shortcuts app, and it's extremely powerful. Like, you can do pretty amazing things with it. You can even do things like run SSH commands and things like that on a remote server. So it really kind of opens up a lot of doors. And I'm really excited about it. I wasn't super excited about it earlier because I guess I didn't really see what I would use it for, because I'm doing 90% of all my work or more on a Mac. So I was thinking, you know, what will I really use this for? But now that I see all these possibilities, I'm starting to get excited about it, I must say.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before, that some things are easier to automate on iOS than on the Mac, at least for if you don't want to get into writing a script or something, which even though I am a programmer, sometimes I like to be able to just drag things around and make up some custom shortcuts. And I made like a very simple one, but that's for me. I know for you, you think it's silly, but it's very simple. It happened many times that I was almost like finishing cooking my lunch or dinner, and I wanted to, and then my phone starts buzzing, and I really want to put it in do not disturb mode, but I can't take it out of my pocket because my hands are dirty or greasy, and I'm doing something that I can't really pick up my phone. And so I set up two very simple shortcuts to enable do not disturb and disable do not disturb on my iPhone. And you could do this with Hey Dingus before, I think, if you used your iPhone. But I have the trigger phrase disabled on all of my devices except the HomePod and my Apple Watch, because those are the ones where I actually use the trigger phrase. So I set up two shortcuts, configured a custom phrase. So now if I'm doing something that I can't pick up my phone and I really want to put it in do not disturb mode, I can just tell HomePod to do it. And it's something that happened many times that I was, oh, I wish I could just say to HomePod that it should put it in do not disturb mode. And now I can, and I'm very happy about it.
Yeah, that's great. And then you have to go wash your hands anyway. But yeah, that's another thing, right?
Yeah, but you see, like, I'm doing some French fries or something. I can't go wash my hands right now, and my phone is buzzing and it's bothering me.
All right. That's great. And that's the beauty of these things, that you can create things that are really suited for you. And one thing I think that I'm the most excited about when it comes to shortcuts is the fact that I see this as starting to break down the app metaphor. And what I mean by that is that for ages, like since we got iOS 1, like the first iPhone, we've always done everything by launching an app on the home screen, performing some work, and then going to some other app or leaving our phone. And now we're starting to see these things where we can more build, you know, these custom workflows as a user, and we can create these more lightweight ways. Like, of course, you could have always built an app for, you know, remind me to wash my hands when I'm doing French fries, you know, but it wouldn't probably be worth your time. But now we can create these things way, way easier, which I think is going to start leading to more, you know, not always opening an app to perform an action, but maybe just using the system as a whole, which I think is really, really exciting.
Yeah, I really like the idea, and we talked about this before, that apps don't need to be this full screen thing that you have to launch manually. I really hope that we get more and more extension points as time goes on. And I'm happy with how easy it is in most cases to develop a Siri extension, which is what you use when you want to have a better experience with shortcuts and with Siri itself as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably one of the best things we can do as developers now you can kind of see the trend where so many things now that come out like as part of the new SDK is in the form of an extension, like a Siri extension. We've had keyboards since before. There's all kinds of end user activity based extensions. There's so many of them now. And I think one of the best things we can do as developers to kind of, you know, modernize our apps is to start breaking things up and to actually create these more like services that we can use from all these extensions so that we're ready when new extensions come out so we can take advantage of them kind of from day one.
Yeah, for you, the developers listening, start moving your stuff into frameworks right now, because if you don't, you're going to regret it later. The new version of Chibi Studio I'm working on, 99% of the time I'm working in a framework, which is like the Chibi Studio Kit framework. It's not called that, but let's call it that. So basically the entire app is implemented in this framework. And the app itself is just like the app delegates and the flow, the coordinators that actually present stuff. Only what has to be in the app itself is in the app target. Everything else is in a framework or multiple frameworks, especially since the app has an iMessage app as well, which is basically the same as the app with minor differences. So it makes sense to have everything in frameworks, and it's definitely going to pay off when I start doing the Siri stuff and other types of extensions.
Yeah, and it also pays off in a big time, you know, for other things as well. For example, testing becomes a lot easier when you have split things up and you have more clear interfaces and you don't have as many dependencies on the actual UI. You're more like separating your logic out into frameworks that you can test in isolation. And you also end up with like a little bit of a better system architecture generally also, where you have these different parts that you can build your app from together. And if you implement a new extension, maybe you just need framework A or framework B. You don't need C, D, E. And that way you can kind of compose different functionality depending on what you're trying to build.
Yeah, and I see some developers worried about launch times with dynamic frameworks. And it's a valid concern. But Chibi Studio, it has like, I don't know, I think 5 dynamic frameworks that are made by me. 1 third-party dynamic framework, plus all of the system frameworks and the Swift runtime. And it barely takes longer than the animation of the home screen to launch. Like it takes, I don't know, a second, 2 at most, even on an old device. So if you are within that limit, it's fine. You're not going to see too much of a hit in launch time.
Yeah. And it's like one of these things also that it really depends on how big of a frameworks we're talking about and how many they are and things like that. And of course, one framework with 1,000 classes is not the same as one framework with 10 classes. Yeah. So my recommendation is always to measure this kind of thing, like keep measuring the startup time. And as you start moving things out into frameworks, which, you know, has some really good benefits, like we just talked about, but be careful, you know, take a look at those metrics and, you know, don't go too far, obviously. You know, you can obviously say like, oh, I can split up everything into 100 different frameworks, and maybe that's not productive either. So finding a good middle ground here is really key, both in terms of, you know, what level to break things down to, and also, you know, keep an eye on that startup time so you don't end up with too much dynamic linking going on.
And if you are, if you can trade some disk space for launch performance, you can use static frameworks. It's going to make your binaries bigger, but it's going to not do that hit on launch times. The general rule I like to think about is if you need a splash screen for your app, it's taking too long to launch. Like with the version 2 of Chibi Studio, when you launch it, it's like an empty tab bar and an empty white view, which is kind of like the app looks like when it finishes launching. So when you are already, when you have gone through the onboarding and stuff, you launch, you're going to see for a split second the empty view, and then it pops up with the app itself. So it doesn't have a splash screen. And I think no app should need a splash screen.
Yeah, I think that's been kind of the recommendation from Apple since day one to mm-hmm. make the, back when we had the launch image.png, right? Instead of having a storyboard. you, the recommendation was to basically take a screenshot of the app, like in an empty state. But of course, back then, app launch could be really slow. So a lot of people were building these nicer kind of splash screens. But I agree with you. It's now when we have these really fast phones, especially if you're supporting like iOS 11 and iOS 12, usually it's not necessary. And by kind of measuring that launch time and trying to do everything in our power to reduce it, you know, the user experience becomes a lot nicer.
Yeah, I think most notably the Photos app on iOS 12 takes less time than the launch animation to be ready.
Yeah.
So basically you launch it and before the animation finishes, the app is launched.
Yeah, and the cool thing on the iPhone X is that it's not a linear animation, right? Like you can often like flick things up and you can start interacting with them even as an app is like launching and coming into view. So yeah, that's also really cool because I think there was even a talk at WWDC about this where you could actually start interacting with an app as it's launching if it's loading fast enough.
Yeah, designing fluid interfaces.
There you go.
Really recommend that. We're going to leave a link in the show notes.
Definitely.
And I took a lot of inspiration from that talk to develop the new version of Chibi Studio. I want people to be able to do anything in the app, not have to wait for things like... If I try to open something but I give up, I can give up midway and it's fine. Like I think many apps, they especially on iPhone X and all of the new phones now, basically they feel brittle when you have to wait for stuff to finish before you can do the next thing. And I feel like we should, as developers, should try to figure out how to make our interfaces more fluid.
Yeah, I think one big difference in the kind of design era we're in right now compared to like the iOS 7 era is that, you know, when iOS 7 came out, there was a lot of criticism that all the animations were super long and you had to wait all the time. And even though things were simpler, usually, you know, things could end up feeling a little bit slower. But now when we have these more gesture fluid UIs, you can really make them as fast as you want because you can move around your finger quicker and you can, you know, everything more responds to your touches. And yeah, I agree with you, like designing things that way and trying to implement them using these new APIs that give you these capabilities can make a huge difference in how, you know, fast an app feels.
Yeah, it's not easy, but it's definitely worth it.
And it's fun.
Oh yeah, very fun. I posted yesterday a video of the transition I made for Chibi Studio when you close one of your chibis. And man, I spent a lot of time and lots of time tweaking. Oh, is this better with 0.05 or 0.052? Like that type of tweaking.
Nice. Yeah, that's all good. Yeah, tweaking animations is a lot of fun, but it takes a lot of time. Speaking about iOS 12, which we were originally talking about, but this is a really, really good discussion. But now let's head back and talk about iOS 12, but 12.1, because we have the public release of iOS 12, but we also have a beta version now of iOS 12.1. And you've, like always, found some really interesting things in there. So tell us about your latest spelunking findings, Mr. Rambo.
Yeah, this was a fun one. Remember, I think I told you, I'm done with spelunking this year. I'm tired. I need to rest. I have vacation coming up in 2 weeks. I'm going to the US, which is going to be very exciting. But I decided to still do it. I have like 10 days of vacation later to rest. And I'm not even going to take my computer. Not even my MacBook Escape. So I decided to still do it. And it was worth it because, as always, I found some stuff. First of all, I noticed that Memoji now involves a system daemon. John, would you like to explain to people what a daemon is?
Sure, absolutely.
It's not like a haunted house.
Yeah, it should not be confused with a demon, right? It's a demon, yeah.
Yeah, so, I think it's pronounced the same, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just spelled a little bit differently.
Yeah.
But yeah, demon is basically a process running on a computer, like running as part of the operating system, running in the background. And that's basically observing events and running things under the hood. So you can kind of look at it as a headless application, like an application application that doesn't have any kind of UI or anything like that. It just runs in the background and kind of keeps track of things.
Yeah, and it usually provides services to quote-unquote real applications, so applications the user is actually running. Yeah. If you want to learn more about daemons, just open Activity Monitor on your Mac and go to the View menu and click All Processes. Then it's going to show you all of the processes, not only the apps, and you're going to find many daemons. Some of them are very obvious, such as Find My Device D. They usually end with D.
Yeah.
Siri Knowledge D. Map push D and so on and so forth. So you're going to find many daemons running on both Mac and iOS. And I noticed that they implemented a new daemon called, I think it's called Avatars D.
Okay.
So the Animoji feature, it's internally called Avatar, and the framework is Avatar Kit.
Right, as you would expect.
Yeah, and they added a new daemon to that framework, which seems to handle syncing. And syncing is the type of thing you'd like to run on a daemon, even though we as developers can do that for our apps. Apple has the advantage that they can do it for their stuff.
Yep.
So yeah, syncing is one of those things that makes sense to be run on a daemon, because you want the syncing to be continuous even when the feature is not in use. So even when you don't have the Memoji open on iMessage, you want it to keep syncing your custom Memoji. And you see, John, not many people have more than one iPhone, except us developers.
Yeah, I wonder why they would want to sync Memojis.
Yeah, all of those people getting a day phone and an night phone.
Yeah, exactly. One for work and one for fun, right? One iPhone XS for both? Maybe not. Yeah, so this is interesting. Maybe we are looking at another device with the same kind of capabilities.
Yeah, so one place where syncing makes a lot of sense, at least for me, is syncing between my iPhone and my Mac, but I have this other device which has a large screen, and it's called an iPad.
Oh yeah, that device.
Yeah, syncing between my iPhone and my iPad is quite important. But you see, John, the current iPads don't have Memoji because they don't have the true depth camera system.
There you go. So what could that mean?
So yeah, so by itself, this was already interesting, but of course, you are just deducting that it's for an iPad with a true depth camera system. But then I noticed that our favorite buddy, Purple Buddy.
Oh, yeah, the Purple Buddy.
Yeah, I think that's the best buddy.
It must be.
So Purple Buddy is the setup app on iOS. So when you set up a new device, there's the onboarding where you log in and you can sync from your other device and stuff. So that's that's called Purple Buddy. And so it now knows about a new asset type for onboarding people to an iPad 2018 fall.
Oh, there you go. They conveniently even put the date in the name.
This is like, it reminds me of the Pride watch face, where it literally had a property called availability date.
Yeah.
So it was very easy to say, oh, Apple is going to release this on this day at this precise time, at this time zone. So yeah, not as precise here. But it's pretty clear that we are going to see a new iPad this fall, and it's probably going to happen during an Apple event in October.
Yeah, this is super exciting. I am really, really looking forward to that. And like we speculated on our previous episodes when we did our poker and things like that, we speculated that there wouldn't be any iPads on the previous event, but there would be a second one, because they haven't updated the iPad Pro in a long time, and this is probably what we're looking at here, is a new version of the iPad Pro. They updated the consumer version earlier this year. Do you think there might be like an S version or something like that of the consumer product, or do you think this will be an exclusive iPad Pro feature, the fact that the iPad Pro will get the new TrueDepth camera, Face ID, and all that comes with it?
I'm thinking iPad Pro first, because probably because of cost. I don't think they can, probably have some cost issues if they want to do it for the current iPad line, the regular, not the Pro one. It's kind of ironic that iPad Pro will get an emoji and Memoji first, which is...
All those business people, you know, they need to have some fun with the Memojis in the meetings.
Yeah, when they have their conference calls, yeah.
Yeah, using Skype. Or like Microsoft Lynx or something like that.
WebEx.
Exactly.
So one thing that I can tell you now is that I know people will probably remember that we teased in this show. We said jokingly 2018 fall before. Do you remember that? It was, I think, three episodes ago or something.
Uh-huh.
Because turns out I was already following the 2018 fall thing since, I don't know, since the first betas of iOS 12. I was looking for assets which had 2018 fall on their name. And this is how I knew that we were going to have two new iPhones this year. And this is how I knew we wouldn't get a new iPad in the September event, because iOS 12 did not reference iPad 2018 fall until 12.1.
There you go. This is a instance where they successfully stripped out that symbol. Or you saw this earlier, right? Because I remember you telling me about seeing this references earlier in the beta process. So it was in earlier betas, but then it was stripped out?
No, it was for the phones, but not the iPad.
Oh, yeah, I see. Okay.
So I was pretty sure that they had the assets for the phones, but they didn't have for the iPad, because the iPad was an October thing.
Ah, yeah, it all makes sense now.
Yeah, so that's a little glimpse into how I figure things out. And you may be asking, how did I know about 2018 fall? Well, because last year the onboarding assets for the iPhone 10 were called iPhone 12, 2017 fall.
Ah.
So it's pretty easy to guess.
Again, they are great with their consistent naming about these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. So yeah, this is we are probably going to see a new iPad and some cool Macs as well. Some 2018 fall Macs.
Do you think that we might see a preview of the Mac Pro, or you think that's too early?
I don't think it's too early, but I wonder if they would prefer to hold that for WWDC, because the audience is more interested in
more
that.
Mac Pro friendly. Yeah.
Yeah. Although I am, I think next WWDC is going to be a huge one, and I think they're going to have so many things to talk about that maybe they won't have time to talk about a Mac Pro. So
yeah, because they already said that the Marzipan release will happen next year. So we already know that next year's WWDC is going to be pretty huge just by that fact alone.
Yeah, but there's more. There's more. But
there's more. Yeah,
that too.
So I'm wondering, is there ever the case where you can find references to new hardware in the Mac OS, like in the Mac SDK or something like that? Or is it either that you're just focusing more on spelunking the iOS SDK, or is it just that the Mac is not set up that way? Like, it does not usually contain these device identifiers and glyphs and things like that. So what's the reason, like, it's not as easy or as common to see hardware leaks from macOS apart from, in contrast to iOS?
Well, the iPad Pro payment glyph leaked from macOS. Sometimes you see that where something is reused between iOS and the Mac, which is very common, and they strip out things on the iOS version but forget to strip them on the Mac version, which is totally understandable.
Yeah.
But it's a combination of all things you mentioned. So first of all, I focus more on iPad, on iOS, and also the Mac is it moves in a slower pace. So there aren't that many new things added all the time, and it doesn't know so much about the hardware it's running on.
Right.
I don't know
if
that's a good way to explain it, but it's less tied to the hardware as iOS.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And they add, I don't know, it just has less identification of the actual specific machine it's running on. So it's not that different if it's running on a Mac Mini 7.2 or a Mac Mini 8.4 or something. So I guess that's why it's less common to find there. And it doesn't use the main entry software update server as much as iOS. So this type of asset identifier is not as common. But yeah, I think mainly it's because it's not a focus. Both me and other people who do this, we don't focus that much on the Mac.
Yeah, but it does really make sense, the thing you say, where if we think about it, Macs in general have a lot more in common in terms of just like how they interact with the operating system and the capabilities of the hardware. Because most of the things that differ between Macs is like how big screens they have, how fast CPU they have, how powerful GPU they have, etc. Sure, there are some differences in terms of like, you know, there's these encryption controllers now and custom disk controllers, and you have the touch bar, and you have differences, of course, and you have features that need to be implemented on both ends. But on iOS, I would say it's just like so much more, where you have things like Face ID and camera integration and all these things that need to be in both the hardware and the software. And another big thing, I guess, also is that the iOS devices tend to have very different form factors. So, for example, when you found originally the iPhone X glyph, that was you know, pretty obvious because it was a different form factor. And the new MacBook Pros that come out, they are not necessarily that big of a difference in terms of the silhouette.
Yeah, exactly. And they have this car types system on the Mac, and it's updated after the devices are released, and it's remote, so it's like difficult for you to find an actual glyph. And there's also the fact that iOS usually gets things first. So, for instance, Face ID, we first found it on the HomePod firmware, and it was a brand new thing, and Macs are getting Face ID who knows when, maybe this year, but the Face ID stuff is already on the Mac, and it's just hard-coded to say unavailable, basically.
Right, return false.
Yeah, exactly, perfect. So we can't say, like, oh, they are based on the software, it's not possible to say they are working on a Mac with Face ID.
Right.
Unless they leak some string saying like you can unlock your Mac with Face ID or something, but that's very rare for that to happen. So yeah, for instance, I know about the iPad with Face ID. First of all, because I found an icon of an iPad without a home button, and we know what Apple does when they remove a home button, they add Face ID as authentication. Yeah. But second, and recently I tweeted a little snippet of this disassemble code from iOS, which is like, device is iPad and device has no home button. The code was something like that. So if device iPad and device has no home button, then Face ID. So yeah, then that's pretty obvious. And some people were commenting on that tweet, saying that zero meant true for some reason, and I was puzzled.
Oh, is it one of those classic things where it's like true is anything but zero, and or should one be?
No, it was actually false. Yeah.
All right, so that's a very interesting finding, the iPad 2018 fall device and syncing of Memojis. But that's not the only thing you found. In fact, you have found what someone could call a little ray of hope. And we don't know if Apple put in this ray of hope only for you to find, Rambo. Maybe it was one of those, like, you know, things you were meant to find. Or maybe it is, in fact, a new ray of hope. So tell us about this.
Yeah, so it started with doing the initial spelunking on iOS 12.1. And I noticed that the sharing framework, which is the framework they use to handle the HomePod pairing UI and all things related to associated devices with your iPhone, they changed some things in there. And those things happen to be related to wireless charging. And those things happen to be related with a wireless charging method where multiple devices can be on the same mat.
Oh, where have you heard this before?
Yeah, it sounds like some error device that Apple announced more than a year ago and hasn't shipped yet and hasn't talked about it. So yeah, this method in a SF wireless charging monitor called refresh on same mat as Mi charging device with Mi wirelessly charging. Ooh.
Need to get a glass of water after reading that method name.
Yeah, those method names. I actually love that.
They're great for you. They describe exactly how the thing is supposed to work.
Yeah. So this is it's interesting because sometimes I choose a specific snippet just to represent what I want to talk about. And people come up with all sorts of theories of why that may be wrong. But this is just one of the things. There are many other references and changes. And I've been following this code for many years. A year. So I know what this means. And it means air power. But that's not the only thing. Happens that people who got their iPhone XS and their XS Max, they notice that the little pamphlet that you get with your device mentions air power.
Ooh, the plot thickens.
Yeah, so when you look into what's mentioned there, there's an item which says charging, and it says, place iPhone with screen facing up on air power or a Qi certified wireless charger. So let me repeat that. Place iPhone with screen facing up on air power.
There you go.
Yeah. And again, people said, oh, they just reused the one from last year. And that's actually not true because iPhone 10, the one that came with iPhone 10 does not mention air power. So this was actually added for this year. And you can argue about maybe this was done in April or something and they forgot to remove it. But I find it hard to believe that they would let this go as this, because it's hard for me to believe Apple would do this.
Yeah, because we've heard a lot of rumors that AirPower is completely canceled and that, you know, they couldn't get it to work in the current design that they had in mind. So it's totally canceled and they've moved on. But this would suggest that at least up until recently, it wasn't canceled and it was indeed kind of planned to ship. So the question is just like how the timelines add up, right? Or whether this is something that was left there and it shouldn't have been there, it should have been removed, or if AirPower is still alive in Apple's headquarters somewhere, still going
if
strong.
If it is dead, the person who's working on that sharing framework didn't get the memo.
All right. Which also is possible, right? Like we
it
know
is,
that Apple,
yeah.
They do a lot of their product development in very, very, like a very separated way, and very, you know, just making sure that some people, they don't even know what they're actually working on when they're writing some of the software. So it would make sense that someone would be under the impression that this is still going, even though it has been canceled, you know, in another part of the company.
Yeah, maybe this is an engineer who's got a prototype AirPower in his desk and is like, there was a ticket refactor AirPower code. And
right.
They just went and
they checked it out and did it.
Yeah, it's possible. It's not impossible, but I have hope. And what I think is going to happen, and what many people think is going to happen, is they're probably just going to release it. And guys, one day it's going to appear in the Apple Store, and that's it. They're not going to actively talk about it anymore.
Yeah, because they've already, you know, pre-announced it. There's already been so much kind of press around it. One thing I'm thinking also, and I want to get your opinion about this, since there's been so many reports that it's kind of been hard for them to realize this product in the current design, do you think it would be possible for them to like, okay, let's redesign this and let's actually make a slightly different design, maybe make it thicker, maybe make it bigger, and just release that as it is, and here's AirPower. Do you think that would be possible, or do you think that it's too late in the game for something like that? Or
being too late is hard to measure because we know that the reports come late. Last year, it was like August, and we had reports from Bloomberg saying that Apple was still trying to figure out how to put Touch ID under the display for the new iPhone, and that's totally not true. I happen to know that the first carry prototypes of the iPhone XR, they were ready in January this year.
Yeah.
The first prototypes that people were actually carrying around. So these things, they happen a long time before, and the report comes a lot later. So maybe by the time October last year came and went, they already knew that the design was flawed and they redesigned it. And they have been working on this new design for the entire year. So we can't really know that.
Yeah, because lead times on hardware are always way, way longer than what we might expect. Because, you know, you have to set up the whole production pipeline and you have to kind of finalize the design, start buying all the parts and all that stuff, right? So while it's probably simpler in a product like this, which is probably going to be orders of magnitude smaller in scale than something like an iPhone. Yeah, totally. They probably would need to start production a or start finalizing the designs for production a lot earlier than, you know, when they start shipping it. But yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. And that's maybe one route they'll go, is where they'll keep the product, they'll keep the name, but they might just tweak the design in order to actually, you know, make it feasible in terms of, you know, the energy and the heat and all those things.
Yeah, just another example of lead times in terms of hardware. People have been asking me about AirPods 2 for a long time. And I always say I really feel like it's going to come only next year, maybe probably September next year. From people familiar with the matter, John.
the people.
The people have said that the actual manufacturing setup started 2 months ago. And if they started setting up the factory 2 months ago,
that means that it's coming tomorrow, right?
Yeah, sure. It means it's going to take probably a year for it to actually be released.
Yeah, exactly. Because also in the earlier iterations of manufacturing something at scale, you always have a lot of problems, right? And you have to fix the production pipelines and all those kind of things. So, yeah, and also with the AirPods, it's like, that product is so good that there's no need to like rush to market here, right? Like they can take their sweet time and set everything up and make sure everything works and, you know, take that extra time because it's such a good product that it's not really in a dire need of an update.
Yeah, and people need to also keep in mind that the wireless charging case and the new AirPods are two separate things.
Yeah.
So when they release AirPower, they are probably going to release a new charging case for the AirPods, and probably the new AirPods are going, when you buy a new one, they're going to come with the charging case by default. Maybe, I don't know, I'm not sure. Maybe it's going to be an option, but that's not new AirPods. It's just a different case that can be charged wirelessly.
All right, so really exciting things there in the new betas, and I'm sure you're going to keep uncovering new secrets, Rambo, as time goes by. And maybe we'll see. Maybe AirPower will see the light of day eventually.
Maybe I'll do the diff between the first 12.1 beta and the second one, and there's going to be a method called "No Rambo, AirPower is not coming. Sorry."
Yeah, that would be super funny. All right. So for the last segment of this episode, we want to talk about something a little bit different, and we want to talk about time management, because both of us, we get a lot of questions from people in the community about how we manage our time and if we ever sleep, right? This is a very common question. Whenever we post something or announce something new, we almost always get this reply, "Do you even sleep?" And that's always a lot of fun. So Rambo, do you ever sleep? I can attest to it because I've seen you sleep now. That's not creepy, but I have. Whoa. So do you ever sleep?
I'm creeped out now. I'm leaving. I do quite a lot, actually.
Yeah, me too. I love sleeping. Sleeping is one of my favorite things to do. And, you know, we totally understand why people are saying this. And we know it's also a little bit just for fun. And we take it also like as a big compliment that we are producing a lot of things and we're being productive. But we did want to talk a little bit about that and like about time management, because I think both of us, we are, we're getting better and better at managing our time and kind of juggling multiple projects at the same time, which is not something I've been good at for a long time. Quite the opposite. I used to be the most disorganized person in the world. I used to have so many projects just half finished, never going anywhere, just wasting a lot of time on them, and not really for learning or something like that either, but just, you know, building something, just, you know, 5-10% and then leaving it. So I've had to work a lot on my kind of time management and project management skills to kind of get better at using my time. So yeah, I definitely want to share some tips about that. And Rambo, how's it been for you? Have you always been like a person who's been able to manage your time in a good way, or is that something you've had to learn as well?
Absolutely not. I like to joke that I am so disorganized that I became organized because I know how disorganized I am.
You went full circle.
Yeah, so I'm so disorganized that I need to be always watching myself.
Right.
So I actually became quite good at that. And I'm like you. I had to learn. And I think the first tip I'm going to give is learning how to say no to things.
Yeah, totally. It's very, very common that you get a lot of, not only like, not like job offers or things like that, but just like, you know, exciting things to do. And this is the cool thing about being a developer, is that we have so much power in our hands. Like, we can build so many different things, and there are so many different things we could pursue. And sometimes we get approached by people who want to do something with us, or, you know, maybe a friend or a coworker wants to start a new hobby project. And like you say, like learning how to say no, or picking your targets and deciding what you want to focus on, that's really, really important.
Yeah, and it's sometimes saying no to yourself, like, oh, maybe I should go watch this new series on Netflix. It's fun. I'm not saying you should never watch anything, but you have to think about it. I know people who are currently watching 5 different series at the same time. I can't do that. I usually have like one that I'm watching, and I watch like one episode per week at most. And that's just one example. There are many things that you need to actually say no to yourself.
Yeah. I think for me, one big change in how I view time has been becoming a freelancer. Because when you are a freelancer, you usually invoice your clients based on how much time you spend on a given project. And that means that you have to start tracking hours, and means you have to keep more track of your time. And it also makes you view time in a different way, where you're kind of not so much looking just at, you know, oh, I'm starting to work and then I'm working and then I'm going home, but you're more looking at how many hours am I working and what am I using those hours for? Because if you make an estimate to a client and you say, well, I think this is going to be done in 30 hours or 40 hours, you better deliver. Because I know we can joke about in you know, some jobs and things like that, like, oh, developers are terrible at estimation, doesn't matter. But when you work directly with a customer and you make promises to them, it's really important to deliver, because that's like, you know, your reputation and what you've kind of promised on the line. So I think that just that fact has really made me kind of more think about time and think about what I spend my time on. And not only from kind of a money perspective, but more like, you know, learning how to divide my time up so that I can work on all the things that I do want to work on, and to also schedule in enough time to rest in between and sleep and, you know, hang out with my girlfriend and my dog and all these things, you know. Time management is not only about working all the time, it's definitely not. It's about just spreading things out in a way that makes you feel productive, but also in a way that makes it possible for you to always have enough rest.
Yeah, and going back to the do you sleep question, I think that's underrated a lot, because this will vary from person to person. I am one of those people who has to sleep 8 hours at least. Otherwise, I'm crappy. during the day. So I really need to get those 8 hours of sleep. And I'm fortunate that my work doesn't impose a schedule like, oh, you have to be working at 8 a.m. I don't have that, so I can be flexible in that regard. But if I don't sleep the time I need, which is around 8 hours, I get easily irritated during the day, easily distracted. I'm slow and sluggish. So maybe if you are listening and you have trouble focusing during the day, or you feel like you're not productive, maybe the issue is that you're not sleeping enough.
Yeah, and that's kind of the kind of stereotypical programmer, right? Like, let's stay up hacking all night.
And, oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, and maybe I could have done that when I was, I don't know, 15 or something like that. You know, just drink a lot of Red Bull and stay up all night. But I'm getting too old for that, Rambo. I'm getting too old for that. But yeah, I agree. It's working more hours to get more done. It kind of rarely works because you have a certain kind of capacity, and that is very individual, and you have to find out for yourself what your capacity is and how much sleep you need, how much rest you need. But trying to exceed that and push like yourself too far, it's usually just a way to kind of very, very short term, maybe get a little bit more done, but you lose a lot of things in the long term because, as you also mentioned, you can get really tired and you feel unproductive and lose focus. And yeah, these things can be really damaging over time.
Yeah, and it's not to say that I never stay up late, but when I do, I sleep until late as well. And of course, I can do that. Not everyone has that option. So you have to manage your own time. But let's say I'm really excited about this cool animation and I stay up until 3 a.m. tweaking the parameters.
yeah.
And I'm not going to wake up at 6 a.m. or 8. I'm going to sleep until 10, 11. So you have to manage that, because otherwise I'm going to feel crappy the next day and I'm not going to get anything done.
Yeah. And my biggest tip around this, you know, now that we know that we need to think a lot about our time and we need to not kind of overwork, that's usually not the answer. One way to get a lot of things done, for me at least, has been to really split things up. Like, split tasks up as much as possible so that you can move them around and slot them in different slots. So let's say that you're working 8 hours in one day. If you have one task that is 8 hours, if you get interrupted or if this task takes longer than you expected, the whole day is kind of ruined and you lose a lot of productivity. But if we instead have, let's say, 4 2-hour tasks, we could do 2 hours in the beginning of the day, then maybe move on to something else. Let's say something comes up in the middle of the day. You could jump on that and fix that and then come back to the other part of that task. Because context switching in the middle of one task can be really, really expensive. So if you get really interrupted and you need to do something right in the middle of a task, it can get really hard to get back to that and can take a long time. But if you instead have these kind of more clean cuts between different parts of a new task, then it's much, much easier to switch context during the day. And of course, it doesn't work for all tasks, but for a lot of them, it actually works. Like, even if it's building a new feature, for example, you could usually maybe build the logic first and maybe write some tests against the logic. And then maybe you could build the UI separately, or maybe do the animations last, for example. And that way you could continuously build up this thing during a day instead of kind of building it as one big blob.
Yeah, definitely. If you can split up your tasks, you have that endorphin rush of, oh, I finished something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And the more you can get that during the day, the many more times, the more you feel motivated and productive, really. And maybe, you know, getting things done is more about getting many small things done rather than just one big thing.
Yeah, and also one thing I do, which is it's I've been doing this for many, many years, and it's definitely helped me, is I don't have to remember anything. I add everything to my calendar, I do reminders, and I use the standard calendar app on Mac and iOS and the standard reminders app. I know there are better ones, but I use the regular ones, and I don't have to remember anything because my devices will remind me of anything important I have to be reminded about. And that's also helped me a lot. And when I'm going to have like a trip, I put everything into notes. I put like a checklist of what I have to bring with me so I don't forget anything. I put all of the boarding passes, phone numbers, addresses, everything is in there. So I free up my mind. I don't have to worry about that. My device is worrying about that for me.
Right.
And if I need some information, I can just grab it.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And I totally agree with that. Like trying to get as many things out of your head as possible, that can really reduce stress. Because if we think about it, like, you know, if we look at our brain, like, you know, memory, like RAM, once RAM starts filling up, you know, it becomes really stressful because you need to save some RAM for your current activity. And that's why I also, just like you, always I write down as many things as I can about these tasks thing. I try to split them up and put them in a list. And so I know when and where I'm going to do that thing. So it's not like, you know, something I have to stress and think about. Everything is more planned. And now that we're talking about these things, maybe it sounds like we're spending like, I don't know, hours planning. But for me, like just taking like 15 minutes in the beginning of a day while I'm having my first cup of coffee to just like kind of plan out the day, like move things around to see like, okay, what do I want to get done today? Maybe this, this, and this. Maybe I want to, you know, write this article, or maybe I want to develop these features, or maybe I want to record a podcast, and I have all these things that I want to do, and I just try to build my schedule in the morning, and that way I can also be very responsive if something happens. If something happens in a day and I need to deal with that tomorrow, I could fit that in tomorrow's schedule.
Yeah, and like setting up the like reminders and calendars and stuff, that's super easy. When I'm home, I just use HomePod. I just ask Siri and do that. So
that's what digital assistant is for, right?
Exactly. Yeah, when I'm cooking and I run out of something, I just yell to add that thing to my shopping list. So it's very, very handy.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So if you want us to talk more about this on a future episode, now we just gave a little brief overview about kind of what we think about when we manage our time. But this is, of course, a huge topic, and we can go into more detail if you want in a future episode. You can send us questions about time management and about technical stuff, about programming things. All you have to do is tweet with the hashtag AskStackTrace. You don't have to mention any specific account, just tweet out there with the hashtag AskStackTrace, and we'll pick it up and we'll answer it on a future episode. But for now, this is it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And you can find all of our show notes and everything about this show at stacktracepodcast.fm. You can find me on Twitter at John Sundell, and you can find Mr. Rambo on Twitter at _inside. If you want to support this show and want to see more episodes happen more regularly and to get access to our bonus content, including our after shows, you can head to our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/stacktracepod as well. We have a really cool after show coming up this Friday as we're recording, so it's really, really exciting times. But that's it for this episode, so say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.